like the French to do is to reconsider their $10 billion arms deal with the Saudis, which is making it very difficult for them to maneuver actual sober policy vis-a-vis Saudi funding and ideological support to both ISIS and ISIS type figures. Until that happens, I'm afraid it's just basically speciousness.
I want to thank you all for being with us, Vijay Prashad, professor of international studies at Trinity College. I want to thank our guest in Paris right now, standing in front of the theater that was the site of the carnage, Yasser Louati, spokesperson for the head of the international relations desk for the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. Also want to let people know Juan Gonzalez will be interviewing Lin-Manuel Miranda at NYU. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 7:59, 8 o'clock. Coming up next on The Boo, it's More Talk Radio, hosted by Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's guest is Drew Spencer, legal director at Fair Vote. Our topic today is electoral reform and the role it played in the 2015 elections.
I'm David Barsamian, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month is the amazing Nina Simone, showing Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Nina Simone was one of America's true musical geniuses. With her unique signature mix of layering folk, gospel, classical, pop, and African music, along with a revolutionary vision of Black freedom, pride, and defiance. Again, that's the amazing and revolutionary Miss Nina Simone, showing as part of the We Real Cool film series on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week, $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs Director. This is a salary full-time position paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the Boo. That's at kboo.fm on the homepage, right-hand side, under News from the Boo. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
Morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web, and this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I will be joined by my co-host Celeste this morning, and today is November 16th, and it's about 8:03 a.m. Pacific time. This morning, we will continue a discussion that began on Friday, not with us, but with Lisa Loving, talking about elections, more specifically what happened in the recent elections and how it might continue to have an impact on local and federal elections. Our guest this morning is Andrew Spencer, who is with Fair Vote. He is a deputy director there, and he has focused on a number of issues in which we will examine today. I also note that that he and I share something in common. We both have BAs in philosophy. But Andrew, I think it took you to a place that you probably did not suspect when you first enrolled in school. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Cecil. It's great to be on. And yeah, you're right about that.
Well, thank you for talking with us this morning, and also I want to thank you for appearing on the air a couple of days ago. For those of us who are unfamiliar, begin by telling us what is Fair Vote and its mission.
Sure. So Fair Vote is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We basically are seeking to make representative democracy fairer, more functional, and more representative by developing analysis and educational tools so that our reform partners can work to sustain and implement improvements to American democracy. So we're perhaps best known for our work on the issue of ranked choice voting. So this is giving voters the power to rank candidates in order of choice rather than having to just select the lesser of two evils in every election. But we also work on a number of other issues, from presidential elections, local elections, even issues like the representation of women in elected office and voter registration as well.
You cover a wide field, but I think it can all come under the rubric of making sure that elections are open and fair for all citizens. And I want to talk about ranked voting and how it might allow us to encourage more voter participation and encourage more informed and meaningful elections. Tell us a little bit first about what is ranked voting. I think many of our listeners know, but tell us about its what it is and how it works.
Absolutely. So with ranked choice voting, the main thing that voters will notice is that instead of being limited to only voting for one candidate, you have the power to rank all of the candidates in order of your choice. So you can say who your favorite is while also being able to say who your second favorite is and so on. And it has a number of benefits. So a lot of places that hold elections, they have to choose between either doing something that will limit voters' choices or they have to be willing to accept elections where somebody might win even though most voters didn't like them. So for the former, there are places, for example, that limit your choices on the general election to only two candidates. When you only have two choices, one of them is going to win with a majority vote, which is a good goal, but it also means that a lot of voters will feel like they don't really have a meaningful choice when they go to vote. On the other hand, other places will allow voters to have more choice, but when they're selecting only one, the candidate who has the most votes might only have something like 30, 35, 40% of the votes. And that happens a lot. If you look at Maine, for example, many of their prior gubernatorial elections have ended with a candidate winning, being elected to governor of Maine with less than 40% support for voters. So ranked choice voting allows you to get the best of both of those options. So you have all of these choices, and you can rank them in order of choice. Initially, we're only going to look at first choices. That way, we can get a sense of whether there's one candidate that really stands out and has majority support. But if there's not, if voters are too split up among multiple candidates, we can start eliminating the candidates with the least support. But if your candidate gets eliminated, your voice will still be heard because your vote will count for whoever you rank second. That way you can do this round by round, eliminating candidates until you're able to identify a candidate with real majority support among the people. That way you wind up with an election where voters had real choices, they had more power, and you wind up with the candidate being elected who really reflects most voters.
Now, explain to me a little bit more in terms of how this operates. I think one of the difficulties that people might have with ranked voting, I'm thinking particularly in terms of partisan elections. So would this work in nonpartisan elections or also in partisan elections? And I'm thinking, for example, is this any way related to open voting in terms of primary elections? So, for example, if you have a Democratic or Republican candidate, anyone can vote. Tell me the difference between that and what you're speaking of now in terms of ranked voting.
Certainly. It can work well in either a partisan or a nonpartisan contest. So one of the reasons we spoke on Friday was because we were talking about the 2015 election. Odd year elections, there are a lot of local places that will be electing city council members and mayors and that sort of thing. And six of them actually did it with ranked choice voting, and they were all in nonpartisan elections. But you can still see how it can work in that nonpartisan context, because if you've got, for example, in Portland, Maine, you had two candidates who were, although it's a nonpartisan race, two candidates who were front runners who were sort of known to be Democrats. But you also had a Green Party candidate, a candidate who is associated with the Green Party. Now, ordinarily, if you've got a race with two candidates and then a Green Party candidate, a lot of people would encourage that Green Party candidate not to run. They'd say that he might be a spoiler. But because they use ranked choice voting in Portland, nobody raised that accusation. There was no concern about him being a spoiler, because if he didn't have enough votes to win, then his supporters' votes would count for their second choices. That way people were able to have those choices on the ballot. They were able to hear his voice in the debate without anybody shouting at him to leave. And at the same time, there was no concern about him changing the outcome of the election simply by participating. Now, Maine will be voting next year in 2016 on a ballot initiative to adopt ranked choice voting for all of their state elections. So that means their partisan governor's election, their partisan state legislative elections, their partisan federal elections, so their congressional and Senate elections as well. And that way, you'll be able to have Republicans on the ballot, Democrats on the ballot, as well as people who petition to get on as independent, members of the Green Party, members of the Libertarian Party, whatever it will be. People will be able to have those kinds of choices in a partisan election. So it really works in both contexts. The relationship it has to open primaries, I think, is that a lot of people are very concerned about closed-off primaries because they see that there's a lack of competition in the general election. When general elections aren't competitive, then suddenly the primary election matters a lot. And if you're not allowed to vote in the primary election, you might feel like you don't really have a voice in who's going to be selected. So people argue for opening the primaries. What we say is that maybe it would be better to actually open the general election. That is, the issue of who can and can't vote in primaries becomes less significant, less critically important to people when they have a real meaningful choice in the general election, where there are multiple candidates reflecting different viewpoints who can run honest and open campaigns. So ranked choice voting helps the issue of open primaries by actually opening the general election.
But how does that work in terms of a viable candidate getting squeezed out from the party ticket in a primary because they didn't gather sufficient votes and making it to the general election?
Well, one way that it can help that, and admittedly it's a little bit indirect, is that one reason why candidates who are maybe challenging their incumbent or maybe challenging their party leadership are running in the party primaries is because they know that they can't meaningfully participate in the general election outside of that context. So with ranked choice voting, as many candidates who want to honestly campaign really have a vision for the office that they're seeking, they'll be able to participate in the general election. I mean, depending on what the ballot access laws are, which is another issue that's definitely very important.
That was going to be my next question, yes.
Yeah, so opening ballot access laws is much more important. With ranked choice voting, the issue of ballot access actually becomes easier because there's no longer that fear that if another candidate is running, they might split the vote.
What I was wondering is, would that open the opportunity for me to run even if my party decided that they did not want to endorse me? I would still have the opportunity to run, correct?
You could participate as an independent or something like that if the ballot access law is allowed. Yeah.
So this notion, it's not totally new, that just was developing a bubble last week. I understand it has been practiced rather successfully in several localities. For our neighbor in the South, San Francisco, in terms of municipal elections, tell us how it works there.
Sure. So San Francisco is one of the cities in the Bay Area. There are several cities in the Bay Area in California that use ranked choice voting. And San Francisco, we saw an election in 2015 in which there was real accountability in a way that there might not be otherwise. When candidates are able to participate, able to enter the debate without fear of being spoilers, we're able to see them run and hold the incumbents accountable. And sure enough, in San Francisco, about 2 out of every 3 races in which an incumbent faced a challenger, the challenger beat the incumbent. So the incumbent was actually sort of kicked out of office by a challenger who was able to appeal to a majority of voters better than that incumbent was. Even the mayor, although the mayor was elected with majority support, it was quite a bit lower than I think a lot of people were expecting. And it's because challengers use ranked choice voting to demonstrate almost sort of a protest. Basically, none of the people challenging the mayor were expecting to win election. Most of them weren't. They weren't people with political experience or anything like that, but they ran a protest campaign that was able to demonstrate that many people in the city weren't happy with the mayor. So although the mayor was reelected with clear majority support in the first round, it'll be with the understanding that that he had better, you know, listen to the voices of the people much more carefully in the future.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste Carrier, and I am Cecil Prescott. Our guest this morning is Drew Spencer, who is with Fair Vote. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a question or comment about this topic. Tell us in terms of voter participation. Oftentimes, off-year elections, there's lower voter participation. Mm-hmm. Is there any relation between ranked choice voting and increased participation?
Whether it's mail-in or in-person.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because Oregon, of course, is all mail-in ballots, so voters will be familiar with that. There is a connection, but it's not perhaps as clear-cut as some might expect. So what really drives voters or prospective voters to come out and vote is when they feel like they have a meaningful stake in the election. There's somebody they want to see elected who has a real chance of being elected, then they're motivated to come out and vote for them. Ranked choice voting, as I mentioned, allows more candidates to participate, which can help with that. But more significantly, in many places, it can eliminate the need for any primary election at all or any runoff election at all. Primary and runoff elections have very, very low turnout, yet they're very, very important. So in San Francisco, for example, they previously had a system where a candidate could run, and if no candidate received a majority vote, they would go to a runoff election between just the top two candidates. But turnout was so low and so unrepresentative in the runoff election that candidates were being elected with a very small number of votes. Under ranked choice voting, they're able to be elected in a single election. So voters only come to turn out to vote once, which means that you don't have those low turnout runoff elections deciding who's actually going to be elected to office. Similarly, places with primary elections that are eliminating all but two candidates, there you have this small, less representative group of people deciding who the general election voters will and will not be able to vote for. With ranked choice voting, you can get rid of those primary elections, and that way you can have that single, larger, more representative group of voters deciding for themselves who is going to represent them.
In a recent article that you wrote in Fair Vote, you looked at several elections that took place this month. Are there anything, any trends or anything you would want to highlight about what has taken place in these various municipalities?
Sure. We covered a few elections that took place in 2015. So if listeners want to go to our website, it's fairvote.org, and if you just scroll down, you'll see the blog on the left there. I wrote a piece titled Seven Ways Ranked Choice Voting is Empowering Voters in 2015 that covered those six cities that used ranked choice voting and talked about the benefits that they had there. And I also threw on a seventh, which is Louisiana, which uses ranked choice voting for its military and overseas voters. That's because they have runoff elections, but rather than requiring the military and overseas voters to get a ballot in the mail, fill it out, return it, get another ballot in the mail, fill it out, return it, they just give them a ranked ballot so that they're able to participate in both the election and the runoff election with a single ballot. It's really been a great reform. It's now used in four states, have adopted it to make sure that their military and overseas voters will be able to exercise the franchise. Additionally, there were non-ranked choice voting elections that we covered that had interesting effects. So we saw in Virginia state legislative races, for example, every incumbent easily be reelected, highlighting just how bad of a problem redistricting has become, or rather districting, to be frank.
The piece
really makes the case that relying on districts that elect one person each, electing a whole body from these districts that are winner-take-all, one person elected in each, really is a killer for competition and for fair representation. Basically, no meaningfully contested races, so that, you know, a place where people will really have their votes sought after because they're, you know, because candidates are trying to defeat a challenger or to defeat an incumbent. When the districts were single winner, the incumbent could basically sail to re-election in most districts, the overwhelming majority of districts, without facing any real competition. We also covered an interesting thing that happens in local elections in Pennsylvania and Connecticut. This is a place where there are actually set-aside seats for the minority party. So you'll have, for example, a county board election where six are to be elected, but no single political party is allowed to win more than four seats. That way, if you have a Republican-dominated area, they'll win four seats, but then the Democrats will typically win the other two. So that way you have that alternative voice there and people have better representation. This is an interesting thing because it's really very different from what people think of as the normal way of doing elections, where if a majority supports such and such political party, then they get all of the representation. That's a winner-take-all mindset.
So you're talking about proportional representation, right?
Yeah, it's basically a very modest form of proportional representation that they've been doing for over a century in Pennsylvania and for about 50 years in Connecticut. These are American elections where they're using a modest American form of proportional representation. And we're actually arguing that something like that, a more proportional system, a fairer, more representative system, could be used even in congressional elections. For people who want to see our recommendation for reforming Congress, using multi-winner elections with a fair representation system, actually ranked choice voting in multi-winner elections, they can check out rcvact.com, as in Ranked Choice Voting Act, rcvact.com.
Now, what you're talking about in terms of proportional representation also should not really be foreign to U.S. voters. That was something that Lenny Guinier raised back in the, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s.
That's right. Lenny Guinier, it was in the early 90s. She was under consideration for heading the Voting Rights Division of the Department of Justice.
Right, under Clinton.
That's right. And it was a very serious thing. And in fact, what she was talking about was using American candidate-based forms of proportional representation in cases brought under the Voting Rights Act. That's happened in well over 100 places in the United States. I don't believe that any of them are in Oregon, but there are places in a number of states in Illinois and New York, lots of them throughout Alabama and Texas. They're using these candidate-based forms of proportional representation. We usually just call them fair representation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those places have seen resolution of these Voting Rights Act cases, empowerment of their minority voices, without needing to resort to the ordinary remedy, which is to draw majority-minority districts.
Mm-hmm.
Redistricting. Yeah, it's an important thing to do to ensure minority representation if you're going to use single-winner districts. It's a way of integrating the legislative body, basically. But they're also not competitive districts, so you wind up with a situation where a lot of people are still feeling unrepresented because, you know, maybe they're a member of the minority community, but they live outside of the majority-minority district or something like that. With the proportional voting system, like ranked choice voting, you can get actual representation for everyone in the city or the county or, as we've argued, for Congress.
You're listening to KBOO. This is your community radio station. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. Our guest this morning is Andrew Spencer, Senior Staff Attorney and Deputy Director at Fair Vote. We're talking about elections. We're talking about voting. We're talking about voters' participation. What are some of your thoughts on these subjects? Give us a call, 503-231-8187.
Well, hold on just a sec. And we especially want to encourage those people who are active in getting the vote out to call and discuss how you are working on various initiatives here in Oregon that our guests could either aid you with or give you some relevant information.
Whenever we talk about election and electoral reform, campaign finance reform has to be a part of that conversation. How does ranked choice voting, does it and work with campaign finance reform? Or, certainly those are two separate issues, but is that something you also work on your organization?
Sure. So we don't work on what we usually refer to as supply side campaign finance reform. So that's typically when people think of campaign finance reform, they think of regulating how much people can donate, who can donate, or what sorts of organizations can donate, whether that has to be disclosed. Those are all really important questions, and I don't want to suggest they're not. But what we focus on is the demand side of campaign financing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you've got two rounds of elections, a general election and a runoff election, that's going to extend the campaign season, which is going to mean that people are going to need to spend more money in order to reach more voters, or in order to reach voters again a second time. Or if you've got a situation where the election is winner-take-all, where a district is going to be 100% represented by a Democrat or 100% represented by a Republican, you can see how that becomes really high stakes. And suddenly there's this race to outspend your opponent because that becomes very critical if it's a competitive election. With something like ranked choice voting, and especially with something like the Ranked Choice Voting Act, there's no longer that race to the top. If you're going to have one round of elections, then voters can rank candidates honestly. We've also seen, and there's honestly it's somewhat preliminary research, but it fits with what we've heard as anecdotes from the people running for office in these places, that reaching out with a lot of campaign advertising isn't as effective under ranked choice voting. Because not only do you need voters' first choices, and getting their first choices, you're going to do most effectively by reaching out to them on a more personal level, you know, by, for example, walking their neighborhoods or something like that.
Answering questions, having the background that makes a difference, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But also getting those second choices, getting those third choices. For one thing, you can't do it by slamming your opponent.
I was just about to say that minimizes your chance to make it to the rank.
Yeah, and we have some very good evidence that that ranked choice voting increases the civility of elections in these places. But when you're not spending a lot of money on mudslinging ads, when you have to reach out positively to voters in a more personal way, it seems to require less money. And we've seen places like Minneapolis in their 2013 election, for example, or 2014 election. It was an open seat, so there was a huge number of candidates. They had very liberal ballot access laws, so there were a lot of candidates running. But there was the traditional front-runner candidate, and he spent a lot of money on TV advertising and that sort of thing. And then there was this new voice, this woman named Betsy Hodges, who ran more of a door-to-door kind of campaign. And she wound up winning. She wound up winning not only by getting more first choices than the candidate who had outspent her, almost 2-1, by the way, but she actually got more of those second choices, more of those third choices, a lot more. So not only was she ahead in the first round, but her lead increased and increased and increased as we counted those second and third choice preferences. So that kind of campaigning is what's rewarded with ranked choice voting. So rather than regulating the supply side of campaign finance, this seems to have allowed a candidate to win without having to spend a lot of money that they've raised from, you know, potentially corrupting influencers.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 if you're in Points East in Hood River along the Columbia River Gorge. In Points South and Philomath and along the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3 and on the web, KBOO.FM. We're speaking with Drew Spencer, who is the the lead legal representative, there we go, of fairvote.org. And we invite your questions. Don't be afraid. We've got elections coming up, and we know you have questions, especially people who are trying to get out and get the vote out or to excite people about their candidate. And perhaps you might learn some new techniques or strategies. So do give us a call, 503-231-8187. One of the things that most concerns us is how we can either do away with the fear and possibly even the need to have voter rights protection laws and to increase minority participation and enfranchisement. Can you tell us some of the areas, let me put it this way, some of the municipalities or states where you've seen the most gains from states or local municipalities using your ranked voting and adhering to some of your other voting techniques?
Sure. So ranked choice voting, for one thing, getting rid of those unrepresentative primary elections, those unrepresentative runoff elections, really seems to help a lot in terms of making sure that the population that is actually choosing who's going to represent them is as diverse as possible, as inclusive as possible, I think is probably the best way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Most voters come out to vote in the November general election at a time that they think of as election day. So getting rid of the elections that would take place in June or in September or in December can help a lot in that respect. There's also another project that we work on that you're touching on a little bit, which is our Right to Vote project. So this is concerning the U.S. Constitution, the federal Constitution, which currently does not have an explicit affirmative right to vote anywhere in it. It wasn't included in the Constitution as written or in the Bill of Rights or in any amendments since then. So if we were to unify around having an explicit affirmative right to vote in the Constitution, it would really change how we talk about things like, you know, should this population have that right taken away? Is it acceptable to take away the right to vote from people who committed a felony years ago and had served their time in prison, for example? Or is it acceptable to require people to show a certain type of ID to vote when only you know, only some percent of the eligible voters in that area have that type of ID. Those questions really get reframed when you have a constitutional right to vote that says that this is a fundamental right that can really only be infringed if we have a very good reason to do so. Along those lines, we've encouraged local places to consider this constitutional right to vote in light of their own voting practices. So if a local jurisdiction, a city or a county or even a university, feels like there should be a constitutional right to vote, they should take a look at their own voting practices and seeing if they're really as pro-voter as they believe that they should be. When places have done this, they've adopted all sorts of reforms, from really practical ones like letting candidates campaign in apartment complexes that previously were keeping them out, rather than just campaigning in houses, which maybe would be a very different population of people, to really new ideas, really innovative ideas like allowing 16 and 17-year-olds full voting. So the hometown of Fairvote, where we're located, Tacoma Park, was the first city to do that, and it's since spread. Hyattsville has become the second, both in Maryland, but now we've got people, there's a bill introduced in Washington, D.C., and people are considering extending the right to vote to 16 and 17-year-olds in San Francisco. So this is an issue that seems to be really taking off, and it comes out of a city saying, we believe in the right to vote, and this is what we're going to do to really reflect that belief.
You're listening to Drew Spencer here on More Talk Radio on KBOO. Let's go to a caller.
Roberta. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning. I'd like to go back to something that was briefly brought up a little earlier, and then your guest didn't really address it, and that is ballot access. You can have the cutest, most clever way in the world to vote, but if somebody can't get on the ballot, then that doesn't really serve the community at large.
Yes.
So I want to know, how do they get ballot access in the places where he's saying that this is working very well?
Thanks, Roberta.
That's a very good question. Thank you.
Yeah. A lot of these places, it runs the gamut, to be honest. Some of them, it'll just be a small fee in order to get on the ballot. Some of them will require petition signatures. All of them are using nonpartisan elections, so they're not places where it's done by political parties. But ranked choice voting is a system that presumes choices. It encourages people to vote honestly when they have a lot of choices, and it makes it so that voters can have a lot of choices without it threatening to upset the results of the election. So ranked choice voting twins very naturally with ballot access, both because it operates best when voters have choices and because it provides incentives for the people who are deciding what the ballot access laws will be to make them as open as possible. So if you look at something like, there's this newsletter, Ballot Access News, run by Richard Winger, really great publication that just covers these kinds of questions, you know, third-party candidates, independent candidates wanting to be on the ballot. And Richard Winger has identified that ranked choice voting would be a really transformative way to change the structure of ballot access by making it so that an open election with multiple choices isn't something that's scary to people who are, for example, running elections or people who are expecting some stability in terms of the majority being reflected in the general election.
But I want to see if I'm touching this correctly and get a little bit deeper at what she was asking. For states that currently don't have regulatively easy access to the ballot, is there a process that we need to start to begin? Because we're figuring that one of the challenges is to overturn whatever prohibitive process states or municipalities may have for ballot access, as well as whatever process will be needed to adopt some of the other measures you've mentioned. And so I'm looking at our various electoral processes. So what would have to be done to get that ballot access if you've got a state that's really prohibitive and makes it difficult to get it?
Yeah, it's going to depend on the place. So in a lot of places, the legislature would need to pass it, and in other places, you could do it perhaps by going directly to a petition for an initiative or something like that. But one thing we've seen is that when it's framed in terms of connecting it with a voting system that opens choices, that becomes something that people are more open to. So as an example, in California, they use a system called the top two system. It's also used in Washington, and it's been on the ballot in Oregon a couple times. So Oregon listeners may be familiar with it. Under the top two system, as many candidates as file can run in the first election, but then every voter gets one vote, and only the two with the most votes appear in the general election. So in some sense, that's a very restrictive ballot access law that says that you can only appear on the general election ballot in one way, and that's by placing either first or second in the first election, which takes place way back in June. So the general election, you see only two choices in every race, right? So in many ways, that's a pretty harsh...
very limiting gate.
Yeah, on who you have the option to vote for. Now, we've talked to proponents of Top 2, and they have very good intentions. I mean, Top 2 is intended to make it so that the primary election is fully open to independent voters and to Republicans and Democrats and members of third parties and that sort of thing, which is an important goal to have. But when it's framed in terms of an open general election, they've started to express more support. And in fact, many of the original movers and shakers who pushed for Top 2 to be implemented in California in the first place have started to come out and say, you know, maybe we would prefer if it were Top 3 or Top 4 with ranked choice, if ranked choice voting is used in the general election.
Yes.
So right there, you can see how people become much more open to the idea of expanding choices if they feel comfortable knowing that those choices will be able to be exercised in a way that won't upset the election. Other places it can be a little bit more tricky. So Texas, for example, is very restrictive on what it takes for a political party to get on the ballot. There it's very hard for anyone who's not a Republican or Democrat to get on the ballot. That probably would need to change, because the one place we've seen a lot of attention on this, and I mentioned it already, is Maine. And it's because in Maine, they don't accept a limitation on choices. In Maine, they have a very strong tradition of independent candidates running and even winning. So they've had independent governors, they've got an independent senator right now, and they have a history of that happening. And so they weren't willing to accept a reduction in choices. But when they're seeing candidates being elected with 37% of the vote, they needed to do something about it, so they pushed for ranked choice voting. So the two are complementary reforms. They're not exactly the same. Ballot access is, as the caller indicated, a very important thing to work for.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. We'll go to our next caller. Thanks for waiting. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Wonderful show. And I'm a progressive voter activist. Love KBOO. Listeners out there, please support KBOO. We need you. And my point is that we got to deal with reality the way it is now for the upcoming elections. And it's a winner-take-all system for the most part. And that means we got to get out and vote, because we have to get power, peaceful revolution, to change this system. And your vote counts. Don't let anybody tell you that, hey, big deal if you skip this one. This is a really important election coming up. I was living in Clark County when Greg Waugh, on the recount for governor in the state of Washington, helped raise money to get the recount. It was $750,000. And the Republican had won, one of these Wall Street Republicans. And when the recount happened, Greg Wall won, and we saved the state of Washington for a Democratic woman governor. So please vote. And if you don't understand particular issues and you can't find information, just skip that part. Go on to the next vote. And God bless you, folks. You do a wonderful job. Okay, take care now. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for your call.
Yes, the caller makes a very good point. I'm glad that call came in, because a lot of times when you're in the reform community, you talk a lot about how bad things are.
Yes.
So when I talk about how little choices voters have, or how little competition there is in elections, a lot of people's first instinct might be to think, boy, that really kind of takes the wind out of my sails. Is it really important to vote? And the answer to that is absolutely critical that people get out there and vote every time. And there's nothing inconsistent about saying I will vote in every election, while at the same time talking about ways that the election process can and should be made better.
Who are the opponents of, say, ranked voting, and what are some of the arguments you must counter with those opponents?
Sure. So it's the sort of thing, when you've got something that's so pro-voter, it's the sort of thing where there aren't very many overt opponents, but there are people that will spend money to defeat a ranked choice voting measure. And overwhelmingly, that's coming from the people who feel like they know how to work the current system. So if you've got, for example, a class of political consultants that know how to advise people to campaign, can charge a lot of money for that, in a system that requires a lot of strategy and that sort of thing. And, of course, they're going to like two rounds of elections. That's an entire additional election that they're going to be able to provide advice for. They're not going to like a system that really makes voting very straightforward. Other than that, opponents tend to be, there tends to be skepticism expressed sometimes, maybe even a little bit of cynicism from people who think that the problems are just so entrenched that there's really nothing that we can do about it. And that's the sort of thing that we need to fight against all the time. Cynicism is really not something that's going to help us make things better. And so it's really just in the service of preserving the way things are now. So opponents will tend to be people who like the status quo for one reason or another. But at the same time, we also need to work to make sure people don't throw up their hands and say, oh, well.
Well, maybe it might be helpful to think in terms of some of the proponents. Do you have bipartisan and independent support that will overtly endorse these practices that you've mentioned?
Oh, absolutely. So,
and who are some of them that we can look up and acknowledge?
So if you check out fairvote.org, if you look at our ranked choice voting page, just one of the tabs up at the top is reforms, and you'll see ranked choice voting listed right there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we have is a list of endorsers, and it's helpful to see that, for example, John McCain recorded a radio interview talking about how important ranked choice voting would be for preserving majority rule.
Yes, I see.
At the same time, there's folks on the other side, like Howard Dean has come out very, very very openly in favor of ranked choice voting, and even spoke at an event that we put on a while back about how transformative it could really be for allowing voters to have real choices. In the world of independents and third parties, support is very strong, of course, because they're often the ones who get squeezed out if you've got a vote for one system where people feel like they can't vote for those candidates. So, yeah, the list of endorsers that we have is very robust, I'd say.
Go ahead, Cecil. I was going to ask you to tell us a little bit more. You mentioned it, I think, in passing, both when we mentioned proportional representation and about some of the turnouts in San Francisco. But I think one of the things that a lot of listeners want to hear, because if you can protect your weakest group, then that means that there's protections for the strongest group as well, and that is ranked choice voting and racial group turnout.
Yes, that's right. So in a single election with ranked choice voting isn't going to be a proportional election. So the ones they're holding in San Francisco, for example, they're electing mayor and members of their city council. That can really help underrepresented communities by getting rid of those low turnout runoff elections or those low turnout primary elections or that sort of thing. And we've seen people of color being elected at higher rates in places like Minneapolis and St. Paul and in the Bay Area since the introduction of ranked choice voting and compared to similar cities that aren't using ranked choice voting. But one city I would like to highlight is the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Cambridge, Massachusetts uses ranked choice voting in a 9-seat election. So it's actually electing nine seats by the proportional, the fair representation form of ranked choice voting, which means that any group that makes up at least 10% of the voters will be able to elect a candidate of choice every time. And we see fair representation of Cambridge's voters on a whole variety of metrics. So people will run as neighborhood representatives, and they get elected as sort of neighborhood representatives. But we also see that, for example, the African-American population in Cambridge has had one or two seats on the city council since the 1940s, even though the African-American population of Cambridge hasn't ever exceeded, I think, about 15%. So they're able to have representation of communities that, you know, and other cities. If you look at other cities, if you have a city that's 85% white or overwhelmingly majority not members of a racial minority community, then they very rarely would be electing people of color to their city council, that sort of thing, unless they're drawing districts specifically to do that. But in Cambridge, they've consistently had that, as well as, for example, a candidate who is seen as the representative who really reached out to the LGBT community in Cambridge consistently is able to get elected. And Cambridge, in fact, had an openly gay mayor for the first time not too long ago. So that's the system. The ranked choice voting at large, a nine-seat ranked choice voting election, that really helps take care of representation without the need to draw districts specifically to represent groups of people.
And as from our conversation this morning, and as you have cited municipalities who have successfully used ranked choice voting, that encouraged people, you know, throughout the nation in different communities to work for ranked choice voting. So I'm sitting here in my city of Gresham, Oregon. I think this is a really good idea. What do I do?
Yeah, so there are different levels of engagement that we'd encourage you to get involved in. So the first thing that you can do is go to fairvote.org and sign up to receive our newsletter. That's a very easy thing that you can do that will keep you informed about what's going on around the country on this and the other issues important to FairVote. Donating to FairVote, similar kind of thing. Have you actually support this reform? Now, if you want it in your community, absolutely, I'd encourage you to, for example, set up a meeting, you know, call people together and see if there's interest in that. If you're able to do that, if there's real interest in your community, if there's a problem there that needs to be solved that ranked choice voting really speaks to, by all means, you can contact me, dspencer@fairvote.org, and let me know that you're interested in doing that, and I'll get you in touch with somebody in our outreach department. We're developing right now a toolkit that local activists would be able to use that would help them see what need ranked choice voting might address in their community and what they can do to work towards getting it actually in place in their community. We really rely on those local people who are passionate about democracy right there where they live.
Excellent, excellent. I'm wondering, as we come to the close of our hour, you know, we witness a lot of excitement, or maybe excitement as we prepare for the 2016 elections. And I'm sure, I guess your work will become even heavier as the 2016 election begin to become real for more people. What are some of the things that you will be looking at as 2016 federal election come about?
Sure. So in the most short term, I think the presidential primaries that are going on right now will be a very useful thing to take a look at. Now, the Democratic presidential primary has a relatively small number of candidates, but the Republican presidential primary currently has a lot of candidates, and voters are very split on it. So we've already started to see big polling organizations asking people not only their first choice, but their second choice, their third choice. And in fact, we've set up a web application where you can rank the candidates in the presidential poll yourself. So if you go to our homepage, you'll be able to find that. If you just look in the search bar for RCV app, or rcvapp.com, I believe, also will send you right there, so that you can rank the candidates in either the Democratic or the Republican field. Or if you want, you can rank the political parties themselves, including the largest third party. Now, congressional elections will also take place in 2016. And we really need to highlight the state of congressional elections right now. A lot of people are unhappy with Congress, with Congress's behavior, with the politics that are going on there. But we need to make the connection to how Congress is elected. The fact, for example, that in 2014, 2 days after the 2014 general election, we were able to project the results of congressional elections in over 85% of races. That's without knowing how much the candidates will spend or even who the candidates will be. If the incumbent runs in that district, yes, for re-election, they can basically sail to re-election without too much difficulty because of that winner-take-all nature of districts. And we'll be covering stories about the congressional elections as we get closer to 2016 and beyond 2016 as well as talking about what the alternative could be. Finally, there's the 2015 presidential general election, and it will be important to pay attention to what the Electoral College winner-take-all state-by-state method of electing the president does in terms of the presidential election. Will we see, again, as we've seen in every presidential cycle for years now, an overwhelming majority of states utterly ignored, the presidential candidate not visiting, not campaigning, apparently not caring too much whether the voters in those states vote for them or not, merely because it's a safe state, but Oregon among them, of course.
Yes.
That has to do with a solution that we call the national popular vote, which would really make every vote equal in every state. So we'll be talking a lot more about that as we move to 2016 as well, and perhaps even tracking, as we did in 2012, the campaign visit of the presidential candidate in every state.
Well, certainly your work is so very important, Drew, and we appreciate what you're doing, and also appreciate your advocacy in terms of not only the right to vote, but why it is important. In a minute or so, could you tell some of those people you characterize as cynical why we should not give up on electoral reform?
Absolutely. So what I would say to people who are skeptical that electoral reform is something that can be fought for, that's worth fighting for, is that change happens when people demand it. And we've seen it time and time again. So the franchise has expanded throughout history from the founding of the country, a time when often you couldn't vote unless you were 21 or even 25 in some places, unless you owned the land. And of course, only if you were white and male. And we've seen that franchise expand further and further throughout the ages. We've also seen a movement toward fairness in a variety of ways that can translate to electoral reform. Now, I don't want to give anyone the impression that it will be easy, but when something is important, it's important that we stand up and try. And the more we try, then the more likely it becomes that when those conditions arise that make it possible for reform to actually happen, we'll be ready to be there to actually make it happen. But we rely on you, as I said, the local people working for change in their communities. It's the most important thing in order to make it possible for this to actually happen.
Thank you so much, Drew Spencer of FairVote.org, for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your work and hope you continue doing that important work. Again, for those of you who are interested in finding out more about FairVote, go to their website, FairVote.org. And you have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. For Celeste Carey, this is Cecil Prescott, and we wish you a good day.
Louis de Bruges died at age 17. He left behind a treasure trove of original music, lyrics, and poetry. Free as the Sun is a multimedia project to keep Lou's voice alive and to give voice to one brilliant young man's experience of traumatic childhood abuse and his sorrows as he struggled with addiction. Listen to an interview by Delphine Crescenzo of Rhonda Case, Louis' mother, about this project online at kboo.fm/freeasthesun. That's kboo.fm/freeasthesun.
I'll live up to none but my own selfish demands.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Joe Hill Centennial Tribute Concert Thursday, November 19th, 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. Joe Hill was a member of the Industrial Workers of the World and wrote the classic